an Everlasting Covenant, Commentary for the April 24th, 2021 Sabbath School Lesson by Stephen Terry, Director, Stillwaters Ministry, www.visitstillwaters.com. And through your offspring, all nations on earth will be blessed, because you have obeyed me, Genesis 22:18. Since it's a distant past, the Jews have been referred to as a chosen people. This derives from the Abrahamic covenant, brought into being when God called Abram, whom he renamed Abraham, to leave the city-state Ur of the Chaldees and travel to a new country. That new country has been known by several names: Canaan, Judea, Palestine, and Israel, among others. Terah was Abram's father. And though their family were worshiping other gods, God saw something in Abram that caused him to choose the man for a blessing. But even though God called him while in Ur, he continued to remain with his father, moving to Haran, until Terah died. Lot's father had also died, so both men eventually traveled to Canaan with all their possessions. Abram, to follow God's call, and Lot, to follow Abram. Once arriving there, the two households began to quarrel and decided to separate. Based on God's continuing interaction with Abram, now christened Abraham by God, his calling is affirmed. But Lot experiences no such calling. Instead, he chose to associate with those who were in rebellion against God, rather than working things out with Abraham. As a result, he barely escapes the destruction of Sodom and Gomorrah, losing his wife in the process. Preserving his family line through incest with his daughters, their descendants were the Moabites and Ammonites, people who lived in opposition to the descendants of Abraham, perhaps continuing the opposition that originally separated Lot and Abraham. The names of the two tribes carried the literal acknowledgement that these children, Moab and Ben-Ami, were conceived by the two girls' father, Lot. The uniqueness of Abraham's calling is further shown when, after he fathers Isaac and Isaac fathers Jacob, Jacob travels back to family in Mesopotamia to seek a wife. Even though those family members have continued worshiping idols as household gods, Jacob's wives continued to carry the household gods with him until he rededicated himself to God at Bethel, where he had his vision of the stairway to heaven after leaving home to seek his fortune. At that point, he buried those household gods along with some of his wives' jewelry. Perhaps it is this history of polytheism that caused the Jews to struggle with idol worship for a millennium until they were taken captive by the Babylonian Empire. Those who returned from that captivity seem to have become solidly monotheistic, a belief system that sparked the Maccabean revolt against certain sacrileges practiced by their Seleucid overlords, who worshipped a pantheon of idols. Despite all external influences, it is the persistent monotheism of the Jews that has singled them out as a chosen people. As boiling water distills it, removing its impurities, so the challenges the Jews have faced for millennia has arguably distilled a purer form of worship with a focused dogma uncluttered by the competing claims of a diverse family of gods. Abraham was a part of what is often referred to as the patriarchal period, where heads of households spoke or interacted directly with God and then relayed his will to their extended families. It was, in a sense, a romanticized period of altruistic, nomadic shepherds guiding their people to set up a kingdom for God on earth. It does not question God or demand any sort of accountability for divine actions. Although the book of Genesis is traditionally attributed to Moses, it differs from his relationship to God significantly, except in one marked instance where Abraham pleads with God not to destroy Sodom if enough righteous people can be found there. But in the end, this negotiation is less about dissuading God than it is context for showing how bad things really have gotten there. Two similar events that stand out from this period are the Noahic flood and the destruction of Sodom and Gomorrah. In both instances, God has called an individual to preserve the godly line. Evil had become universal in the earth of Noah's day and in Sodom in Abraham's day. A flood is a solution God enacts for Noah, and fire is a solution for Sodom and Gomorrah. In both instances, the patriarchs appear to be fine with that, not arguing against these actions on the merits. In effect, they are saying, what the world does is between them and God. I am glad I am not on the receiving end. This contrasts sharply with Moses, who, when faced with a similar experience where God was going to wipe out the Israelites and start over again with Moses and his descendants, instead of being thankful for being singled out to be spared, Moses said, no. God responded to that positively and instead returned to getting the people to the promised land, Canaan. Here was a man who appeared to understand what God was trying to do. Although God covenanted with Abraham, he was not able to bring that patriarch to a full understanding of his purposes. It was not for a lack of trying, however. The scene on Mount Moriah where Abraham, commanded by God, tries to offer his son Isaac in sacrifice was pregnant with God's intention for mankind. Abraham was able to trust God and follow him obediently to the mountain, but it is questionable whether he was able to bridge the gulf of understanding how far God would go to save those who were destined to die. Did he understand that God would offer up his own son? If he did, it was apparently lost over time, for the Messiah the Jews eventually got was far removed from what they expected. One might think that if they understood the importance, it would have been patently clear in the preserved text. We can perhaps see the connection with our 2020 hindsight as we peer back from the future. But even so, possibly due to some opaqueness in the preserved text, most Jews are unable to see the connection between Mount Moriah and the suffering and death of Jesus. It apparently is also obscure to them that Moses, Christ-like, stood between the people and God, interceding on their behalf, people who deserved none of the mercy and compassion they were given. In that, even if he did not fully understand the details of what was to come, he showed a profound understanding of the character of God. This is the character that Jesus encourages us to emulate also with his Sermon on the Mount. Perhaps God saw some of that character in Noah and in each of the patriarchs, traits that would one day give us Moses. It may have been a desire to supply a fertile field for the further development of those traits that produced the Abrahamic covenant. God saw not only the good in Abraham, but that he was willing to grow and change over time under his tutelage. But while these individuals all have something to teach us in their stories are only a prequel to the story of Moses. Just as much of the Old Testament is a story that brings us to the incarnation of Christ, the Pentateuch is focused on Moses as a type of Christ. Ironically, he was trained for the first 40 years of his life by the Egyptians, polytheistic idol worshippers. Without a doubt, the Egyptian priesthood played a major role in his education. Nonetheless, he decided to identify with a chosen people, descendants of Abraham. Some believe that this is primarily because of the influence of his mother prior to his weaning. But racism he experienced may have played a part as well. His heritage seems to have been widely known. To preserve his life after killing an Egyptian, he went into exile. He spent the next 40 years under the mentorship of Jethro, a monotheistic priest of Midian. The depth of Jethro's influence may be seen in the fact that Moses married into his family. Infused with spiritual fervor, he eventually returns to Egypt for a battle of the gods, probably appearing as the underdog to the Egyptians with only one god to challenge their pantheon. He nonetheless prevails and leads a slave revolt to bring the people of the covenant out of Egypt and back to Canaan where they belong. Then, in an ultimate on-the-job training program, he spends the last 40 years of his life under God's direct leading. So what does all this mean to us who typically were never descendants of the chosen people of the Abrahamic covenant? Paul the Apostle tells us in his letter to the Romans that we are like children born out of time, and through Christ we are grafted into that covenant. Since we are joined to Christ and Christ is a true vine, not only born of God, but descended directly from Abraham, our connection is real. That vine nourishes us and makes us part of the entire harvest to be gathered when Christ returns. God has made us part of the chosen through Christ. However, although God has chosen us, we can choose otherwise. Like Lot, we can choose our own path. The opportunities he saw in Sodom were real. He saw the dangers, especially when he was taken captive by an invading army. But he still chose the temptations of Sodom over the more austere obedience of Abraham's path. We have the same freedom of choice that Lot had. We are free to choose our own desires over those of anyone else, even God. On the other hand, such freedom may leave us adrift in whatever prevailing current pushes us along. Like Lot, we may find the direction is not what we had hoped. But God offers to be with us each step of the way, showing us the way if we are willing to follow his leading. He is always present to offer his compassionate guidance. As the psalmist said, "Where can I go from your spirit? Where can I flee from your presence? If I go up to the heavens, you are there. If I make my bed in the depths, you are there. If I rise on the wings of the dawn, if I settle on the far side of the sea, even there your hand will guide me. Your right hand will hold me fast. If I say, surely the darkness will hide me, and light become night around me, even the darkness will not be dark to you. The night will shine like the day, for darkness is as light to you." Psalm 139, verses 7 through 12. Some may feel as the devil did long ago, before he revolted and was cast from heaven with his angels, that God takes away their freedom. But there is a great comfort and peace in knowing that God is always present to guide our steps through the challenges we all face in life. But we are free to choose, as Joshua said, "But if serving the Lord seems undesirable to you, then choose for yourselves this day whom you will serve, whether the gods your ancestors served beyond the Euphrates or the gods of the Amorites, in whose land you are living. But as for me and my household, we will serve the Lord." Joshua 24, verse 15. What will you choose? Thank you for listening to this commentary. You may find other commentaries like it, and the footnotes for this commentary giving the relevant Bible passages at our website at Stillwaters Ministry, www.visitstillwaters.com. Blessings on you and your family.